Welcome to Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Sunday strategy session, doing a little bit different angle this week. So I'm going away from the team build for a week. Going to have a special guest next week. We're going to talk about a team we co-own that includes the biggest mistake I've ever made in Dynasty. Stay tuned for that one. That should be a fun podcast. It's one I look back on and kick myself on with regularity. So some of the rules from the Analytics of Dynasty are hard learned. That'll highlight it. This one I want to talk about a couple of things that I've done over the past couple of weeks here. So we're going to update the Deshaun Watson situation. I don't know what the hell is going to happen, if I'm being just super honest. I think the most likely thing, I am baking in that we're going to lose a year. It's essentially what I'm doing. I don't know if it's this year. I don't know if it's next year. I don't think he's going to go to prison. We've already seen a couple of the, maybe one or two, might be more than that at this point, of the women drop the lawsuits. He won a court battle that was largely centered around anonymous filing. So I don't know how their law works specifically, but I do know I had this issue in my past in a past job. Basically, what happens is you try and file under a pseudonym, you know, Jane Doe, right, or Jane Roe, like you know the Roe versus Wade type of, you know, that's a pseudonym. As just a famous example. So that's, you know, you see those types of things in these cases. You're trying to preserve and protect identities of folks, of victims of you know, alleged sex offenses. So there are rules that allow them to file under a pseudonym. It appears, I haven't read all the decisions. It appears they failed to meet the threshold for actually doing that. Typically, what it would require in the cases that I was involved with was basically you had to basically apply to the court to file under a pseudonym. You had to state basically your reasons why, which typically is like, you know, you're afraid of reprisals, you don't want to be, you know, exposed and feel threatened, and all these. There's like a boilerplate motion that folks make typically in those cases. And that has apparently broken Watson's way. I think that it opens up the range of outcomes to include, you know, potential early settlement. I don't think that's the most likely outcome, but maybe if I had that as like 5% outcome, something like that, heading into, you know, this, you know, 2 weeks ago, say, if it was a 5% quick settlement, maybe now it's 10%. Right? I think it increases the chances, but doesn't make it an overwhelming likelihood. I think you'll probably lose some of the people that say, listen, I don't want my name out there. You know, if I could do this anonymously, I would do it anonymously. I don't want to deal with it. You know, I don't want to deal with it. I think that's possible. So you might see the number go from like 22 down to 18, 17, 16, something like that. So I think that's possible too. What I haven't caught yet is if the one that I'm really concerned about, so that would be suit number 3, if that is, you know, if that's one of the ones, I haven't seen that reported yet, if that was one of the ones that was withdrawn or dismissed or not refiled. So that'll be something that we'll have to look for here. I think they still have some time to refile. You know, there's still some upcoming deadlines on it all. So that's really the situation that I find ourselves in. I don't think, you know, I've been sort of racking my brain about this one. And I have been sort of thinking about all of the things that people have done and not and come back from. So we've seen steroids, we've seen shooting ourselves in the leg, Plexico Burress. We've seen dog fighting and going to prison. Plexico Burress went to prison, so we've seen both of those come back. You know, we've seen someone punch, hit someone on camera with Kareem Hunt. We saw that happen with Ray Rice, and then he didn't come back. So I'm not sure what the difference there is, which is an interesting debate. I'm not sure if it's because it was domestic violence versus, you know, I'm not going to go out on a limb for Kareem Hunt, but I think kind of like him in the Mixon deal, wouldn't be one that I'd want to sort of stand up there, but I could legalistically make a sort of self-defense type argument for them. So yeah, I mean, that with Ray Rice, I guess that wasn't there. I don't think that's why, but you know, we've seen a little bit of inconsistency. You know, the Zeke thing, obviously, you know, that was sort of shrouded in some disbelief, I guess. So I do think there's sort of there isn't a clear, like, you couldn't put it on a graph and do like a linear regression and say here's what you think. Like, I think it's basically somewhat unpredictable. We've basically seen two situations recently that I can think of offhand where the person hasn't come back from it. Ray Rice, that was with his wife, and Darius Geis. So, you know, we've seen other stuff too. We've seen, you know, there was the defensive lineman there. I think it's DeMarcus Lawrence, or not DeMarcus Lawrence. I don't want to slander anybody. I think the guy's a UFC fighter now. He got in trouble for, he got suspended at one point. I believe that was for domestic violence. He's on the Cowboys. It's not DeMarcus Lawrence. Apologize to him for that. It's, I can't remember the guy's name, but I think he's a UFC fighter now. So, like, we've seen these things kind of go, but they mostly come back, right? I don't know. I struggle to see how this one's an existential crisis, and the demand for this is just so darn high. Right? The demand for a quarterback is just so much. Right? It's just such an important position. We've seen it with Vic. We've seen these things where if you can do it, you're going to get a shot. And so that's the thing with Watson, like, and he's under contract too. I haven't even explored the dead money, but I know it's like they're not gonna cut him. I wouldn't imagine, you know. So maybe this actually perversely ends up in a reunion with Houston. Would be an interesting thing if they sort of welcomed him back with open arms and, you know, hey, we'll rehabilitate your image and yada yada. Like, that might actually not be that might be more possible than it was in prior iterations there. So he's probably has less marketing, negotiating, less leverage, I guess is the best way to say it, than he did, you know, call it a month ago, 6 weeks ago, something like that. So all of that's to say, I think now's the time to strike. I have twice. I try to preach what I say. And I think if there's, you know, three things that we could sort of talk about, it's embrace variance, and it's have the long view. And the third one is you need to embrace the upside that allows you to have an 8% outcome. I'm not sure if we have found a situation recently that is more reflective of where we can be. Of, let's look at the long view. We'll embrace risk, and we need upside, and we can sort of tolerate it, right? Those are the sort of things that we're looking at. As I sit here right now, like, that's a pretty interesting way to go. I think at that point, when you sort of look at the numbers, it makes some sense, right? I think you sort of have to. It's tough to not be in on it. So one of the things that I've been looking at in the past, I don't know, let's call it like a couple of weeks here, that I'm sort of perusing and looking at, is I'm trying to convert rookie draft ADP into make it a more like a universal currency. So one of the problems that I've had in the past is saying, you know, hey, here's the top, picks between 3.1 and 6 are worth, you know, X. Well, that's great in start one, but Superflex confuses that, and then you're forced to sort of make, you know, adjustments, and then it's, you know, well, what, where do they fall? So what I've been working on in the past week is basically doing a quarterback independent ranking. So I've gone back, and I'll have some more content on this, but I've gone back and really looked at, basically yank out all of the quarterbacks from ADP in the past and then re-rank the players. So it's not to say as much as like, hey, here's running back, or, you know, here's what ADP 13.5 is, right? Or 2.01, right? That, you know, the 13th pick in a rookie draft. This isn't to say how much that pick's worth, but it's what is the 13th player valued at? What is the 13th non-quarterback? So that way we can sort of adjust for Superflex, right? We can say, hey, listen, if this is the fifth non-quarterback off the board, here's what we sort of know historically. So that's something I'm really, really looking at. So some of the things that I would say, like where I sort of come down on this Watson thing is, this is a long, you know, coming back to it. I inherited my mom's gene of storytelling, which is it takes a long time. And so this is one of those cases, but I figured I could explain the process a little bit. When you sort of look at wide receivers taken in basically like the top five wide receivers taken in a rookie draft, right? The guys that are taken, if there's a wide receiver and they're one of the top five non-quarterbacks taken in the class, they basically start up at 54% of a hit rate, and then it sort of drops 2% each time, essentially. So then you're going basically, you know, by the time you get to five, you're at a 46% hit rate. So if you sort of bucket that in, right, that's sort of about what we're going to expect for. That's about what we're going to expect for the. For being in that range. And so that's the thing. I think you sort of look at it and say, all right, like if that's sort of going to be what we're shooting at, okay. We're looking at about a coin flip at the receiver. When you sort of look at running backs who are basically in that, I think Harris is going to be gone. I would imagine Etienne's going to be gone too. So we start looking at like, you know, is that 3, 4, 5, 6, somewhere in that range? You know, if that's a running back, you're looking like 60s, like low to mid 60s in terms of the hit rate. I sort of flip that forward and look at Watson, like it's damn higher than that, right? Like if he's right. The other thing you can do too is to look at the multiple hit rate over the first 5 years of their career, which is something I sort of look at. You know, the multiple top 12 seasonal finishes. So that's something like, you know, about a third sort of in that range for running backs. And if you look at it for wide receivers, you know, you're looking, you know, sort of similarly. Similarly in terms of those hit rates there. You know, basically like in the it's a little bit less, like around 20 to 15%, somewhere in that range. So when you look at it for Watson, you're like, all right, if I'm gonna spend basically what the equivalent is of skill position 5 in this class on Watson, like the upside, like whatever it is for the running back or the receiver, like it is undoubtedly higher for Watson. Again, is it maybe a scenario? This might be an odd scenario where, you know, if is the risk, I think the risk of him playing, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's a quarter, right? Maybe it's a quarter of a chance that he never plays again. I'm just using round numbers. I don't think that's true, but let's just assume that that's true. The remaining 75%, I think that that's not a 50-50 proposition. Right, that is a 80-20 proposition, and multiple hits, multiple top half of the position hits. So you're talking top 6 finishes over the next 5 years for Deshaun Watson at the quarterback position. We're not talking about, you know, 10-20%. You know, we're talking about 50%, 60%. Right? I mean, just in terms of, if he plays that amount of time, that's a very high floor, high ceiling situation. So all of those things point to the fact that in that range, he's a target. And listen, if they're going to be 50-50 bets, in that range, 60-40 bets, like take a huge swing on a player that you know that can do it. Take a huge swing. Like, you're sitting absolutely dead red on a franchise, on a dynasty changing situation. Can you say the same about Devonta Williams? Or Javonte Williams? Can you say the same about Devonta Smith? I can't. Deshaun Watson, I know he is. I know he can change the faces of my league. Maybe there's three or four rookies that will do that. Or maybe there's more than three or four rookies. Maybe there's three or four rookies we sit here right now and say that can do that, you know, that we would project to do that. Maybe more will. But as I sit here right now, like, at 109, ain't happening. So all that's to say, I've made two deals. And the reason I use 109 very specifically, Deshaun Watson I got back 310 and 406. This is super flex tight end premium. I gave 109, 206, 208. Again, the seconds, I'd love to have them. I am not going to let a second round pick in this rookie draft escape, you know, stand in the way of taking a shot on a first round startup pick. Right? Like, when you get a shot to pay a discount for these types of elite assets, you have to do it. And the upside is just too great. It's just too high. So that's one of them. And I sort of look at I look at this team, and to give you an idea sort of where I am situationally. I had on this team, I had Goff, I have Russell Wilson, I have Jameis as well. So it was Russell Wilson, Goff, Jameis, and then I actually picked up, I had stashed Rivers deep and I got to cut him. But I have options, right? But this is a massive, massive difference. So that's the first one that I did. And then the second one that I did was right afterwards. And it's with the same owner in a different league. And he owns Watson and I own basically the same pick. And same range of picks, essentially. So he offered me Watson for 109, 204, 209, and he was going to give me back his third and his fourth, which were early, instead of later. I said, I'll take it. It's double down. I've perused the option of potentially shedding one, just looking to turn around and see if I can take one of my Watson shares and arbitrage it. Yeah, just trade it for more than I got in a different league. So I've been thinking about doing that. I might explore it, but I'm fine ramping up my exposure. And this is an easy way to sort of get a shot at an elite guy. And what are you going to take? Quarterback five in this class ever going to outproduce Deshaun Watson if they're healthy? If they're both playing? I mean, maybe. But that's a 4-5, 6-1 bet in favor of Watson. That's just a huge outlier. I mean, that's just a decision you have to, right? That's high. It's risk. I think it's smart risk. And I think it's, high upside. And those are the types of bets that I'm willing to make. This is a Tyreek Hill situation all over again. And the thing that's different with Tyreek Hill is Tyreek Hill's suspension risk and his existential threat risk, that's basically him never playing in the NFL, were the same. I think if he got convicted of that, he got charged with that, convicted of that, it was over for him because of his priors, because of all that stuff. I don't think that's true with Watson. If he got convicted of the forcible one, maybe, I don't know. We'll see. I don't think that one's, with the fact that they're not cooperating with the police, I just have a hard time seeing how this is an existential threat for Watson. Might it not be pretty? Sure. Might it be a suspension of a year? Sure. But ultimately, I don't think this is the existential threat that it was to Tyreek Hill. So if I'm seeding away a year and I'm going to take running back, I just think of the profile you're going to take there. Right? You're going to take running back, a day two running back, or you're going to take a late quarterback 4-5 or a first round wide receiver. The odds they hit round one are pretty remote. You're not drafting them for round one. What do we talk about with day two running backs? You're hoping for like 8 starts. With a day one quarterback, you're kind of hoping that like 10% would be nice, and you're just hoping they don't fall on their face. And they're probably not going to help you to a major extent. especially if that's Mac Jones, right? He's just not going to have the Konami code to come in and do it immediately. And if it's a wide receiver, right, we can sort of make the same bet later in the draft. Right? We can sort of make that same pedigree bet at a cheaper price. You kind of have to do that. When you add all those things up, you kind of have to do it. So I think anything in sort of that range, you know, I offered 106 straight up. It got rejected. He's kind of like, I'm just going to hold and see. So I can respect that. You know, that's sort of the range that I'm thinking. And listen, do I want to pay like 103? Like, I think he's worth more than 103. I don't necessarily want to pay that. You know, but I'm going to peruse every league. And I think we got to go out there and do it, and take our shot, take a swing, you know, mid to late first, build it around that. He's up, still the most traded player, followed by Sam Darnold, Chase Edmonds, Josh Jacobs, and Curtis Samuel are the next ones. So again, I mean, there's activity to be had. There is a time to buy risk. And one of my things I wrote in an earlier edition was like, I'll run towards a fire. Like, I will run in the opposite direction as everyone else when the upside's really big. And that's kind of where we're at. So yeah, I'll just read off a couple other ones that I've seen here in the last, I don't know, couple weeks here or so. Watson in 111 for 101 and 303. That actually seems like a lot. Watson for 106 straight up. Watson for Allen Robinson straight up. These are all super flex. Watson for Calvin Ridley, 110, 202, and 309 for Watson. Again, that's basically almost the same thing I did. Watson for Cam Newton, 109, 201. It's essentially the same thing I did. Watson for 108 and 301. That's cheaper than I did. PJ Walker. I mean, this is just talk about losing. PJ Walker, 202, a future first and a future second. I mean, you run and accept that deal. J.K. Dobbins in 107 for Watson and 202. Again, that's more expensive than I did. So yeah, I mean, they're all over the place. There's some other ones here that are less good. Like something I might not do in terms of some insulation stuff. Kyler Murray, Mike Davis in 309, right? Like Kyler Murray and Watson were essentially a, you know, that was a debate that you could have. And, you know, I think now he's worth less, right? I still like in a neutral setting, I still like Watson over Kyler Murray for the rest of their career, but you don't need to pay that. That would sort of be the angle there. You know, 102 and 202 for Watson in a future second. Again, I think Watson outproduces the 102 pick. Do I need to pay that right now? I'm going to look for a different way to do it. And maybe this isn't necessarily like in an individual league. You can sort of say, hey, I've got 10, 20 leagues, right? Let's see if I can get to 20% exposure on them and make offers in all the leagues and go after it that way. You know, go after it and try and get the best 4 or 5 deals you can get. Right, if you're doing 20 leagues, don't take one. You know, don't say, "Well, listen, I want to do it in this specific league, so I'll take 102." Go to all the leagues and say, "You know, I'm going to make this offer, and it's going to be about the same offer in every one." And then, if that's a starting point for negotiations, great. If it gets rejected, that's fine too. But don't just go to a specific league where you got a quarterback need and say, "Listen, I'm going to pay 102 for it." You know, that's the wrong approach to this situation. This is a thrift shop situation. You know, kind of run towards that fire and say, I'll rescue you. Like, let me do it. Lamar Jackson and Alexander Mattison for Watson in 106. Yeah, I mean, that's Watson all day long. So, yeah, so that's pretty much it. I mean, I think he's a buy in almost every one of these, except for the construction, right? I don't love the, like, here's one that I hate the construction of. Jared Goff, Cooper Kupp, and 104 for Watson and 306. I hate the construction of that. Just because, like, you're just giving up a lot of assets to get someone that should be falling in price. And I get that they're non-premium assets. I sort of get that. But I think you can get them for cheaper than that if you sort of shop. And again, you're going to have to shop to other leagues. So that's really the thought on Watson. So that's more extended on Watson than I probably expected. But I did want to incorporate some of the hit rate stuff that I've been working on. Again, I'll have posts coming up here in terms of, you know, in terms of some of the stuff going forward. You know, I do think this running back receiver hit rate stuff is pretty interesting, in terms of, you know, maybe we can sort of look at some base rates, sort of how they overlay this. I think that'd be an interesting thing to look at. Again, one other thing that I was looking at too, I think this is, I sort of want to incorporate a bunch of stuff in kind of a smorgasbord of an episode here, and sort of a Sunday strategy session. One thing I thought was really interesting that I sort of graded out, I essentially did a warp analysis of basically first round wide receivers, because I think there's some potential value in that, right? I do think that there's potential value in knowing, you know, what's the risk? What's the benefit of sort of going early at the position? What's the benefit of waiting? Is there benefit? Is there risk in doing it? You know, what's the trade down worth? Yada yada, all those things. So one thing I found that I think is really actionable, and we've seen this, and this is kind of one of my guiding principles going forward. And we made this mistake last year a bit, and I'll probably not make it again, which is there's not a great relationship between the order in which guys go off the board and their warp. So there's only, it's an R. So warp in the first 3 years is basically on the Y axis. And then your, what I call your non-quarterback rookie ADP rank. So basically where you go amongst the skill players and rookie drafts. There's the rookie rank only explains 7% of your first your warp in the first 3 years. So it's 93% of that warp is explained by other things. So I think a lot of that is, listen, if I can take the discount wide receiver, right? If I can take if there's seven wide receivers in this class that go in the first round, I'm just using numbers. And I can take, instead of taking two in the later first, I can take six in the mid second, right? It makes almost all the sense in the world to take that bet on six, especially if you can accumulate more assets. The other thing too that I looked at was warp over the first 3 years for first round wide receivers, and the order in which they go in the actual NFL draft in the first round. So that's your actual pedigree, right? So if Corey Davis goes 5 overall, and you look at, you know, I think would Harry go like late 20s or whatever, right? You sort of put them on a graph. Here's the first 3 years. What does it look like? There's virtually no relationship there between pedigree and warp amongst that tier. So it's one. It explains 1% of your first 3 years warp. So that's a big, big deal for me in terms of things that I'm looking at and things that I want to sort of arbitrage. I think that's a really big one. You know, some other things too that I looked at was basically when you look at all of the position. So if you take the position, just the top four rounds, and you say, what's the warp? The greatest relationship between warp and pedigree is at tight end. So order taken in ADP rank. So right, non-quarterback, you know, where you sort of rank, right? If you're the 10th skill position guy that isn't a quarterback off the board in rookie draft, right? Sort of how does that correspond to the guy that's 30th off the board? And the best relationship is at tight end. It explains about a quarter of it. 24% at running back, 20% at quarterback. 20% for rookies in general, and then only 9% for wide receivers. So we see a ton of variance in where the wide receivers come from. Does that make the case for, hey, we should take more wide receivers later in the draft? They still get just absolutely doused by running backs, or like absolutely crushed by running backs in terms of warp all the way throughout. But I think it's worth noting that like maybe the argument isn't you take more of them later on because they're more variant, but it's that you take, you'd be very hesitant on taking them expensively because there's not a great relationship there. I think that's one of the things we really need to take from all this, is that to be very, very cautious on it. And when you sort of regress it, there isn't a ton of, there's not a ton of benefit up at the top either. I mean, they're getting just doused by, I mean, it's 2.5 to 1 ratio for running backs to wide receivers up there. You know, it's, gets 2 to 1 kind of later on, but I mean, it's getting, you know, it's actually gets bigger, I should say. It gets a steeper increase. It's basically 3 to 1 running backs to wide receivers as you sort of get deeper into the position. It's a pretty big drop. So that's all to say that I think, you know, when you look at the going early at wide receiver, like if I'm going to get the option to take Harris or Ja'Marr Chase, like I'm going to take Harris, right? And I think that's really the thing that we're going to sort of look at in this. And that's really the big takeaway. I'm going to get out of the business of paying up at wide receiver and figure out a way to, like, I can take developmental shots, but I'll take it as wide receiver 6 in the class instead of wide receiver 1. And that has shown success. And again, if you can sort of do that on a base rates thing too, you sort of get a similar breakout age. Those profiles look pretty similar. That's something we really need to do. So in this class, you know, I do have it up on the website. It is the post there that I did, I think it was earlier this week, on basically the rookie, it's the rookie drafts wide receiver breakout age pedigree matrix. I got to work on the branding of that. But when you sort of look at the, I wanted it to be totally descriptive, which seems to be overly descriptive. But when you sort of look at it, for example, like, you know, a guy that's gotten a big bump that I'm actually going to do a player preview on here coming up, Terrace Marshall, like, it doesn't look terribly different from, like, his profile actually looks a little bit better than Devonta Smith, for example. Like, when you look at some of the breakout stuff and when he broke out, like, those are pretty similar stuff. I mean, Rondale Moore broke out better earlier than Ja'Marr Chase did. And, you know, if that's a first-round guy, again, it's going to look a little bit different in terms of how they perform, probably. But that's an interesting sort of arbitrage opportunity. Tylan Wallace is another one. Like, if he snuck into the back of the first round, that's really interesting in terms of that insulates him a little bit more. He broke out earlier than Ja'Marr Chase did. You know, so that's one you could look at and say, huh, you know. So those are really the ones that I think of. And I'm sort of looking at Bateman's another one. I think I already mentioned Terrace Marshall. Elijah Moore is one that I have to look at more of, but he sort of compares favorably in terms of breakout stuff. Him and Ja'Marr Chase basically look exactly the same in terms of breakout stuff. If he's going to be kind of like a late first, that's pretty interesting. Again, their roles might be different, but that pedigree stuff, that, you know, where they go in the draft, it hasn't been predictive. And I think that's a lesson we need to take from this. It's not to totally write off Ja'Marr Chase, but how do we make bets that look very similar to Ja'Marr Chase? And do that at a cheaper price. I mean, that's really what we're trying to look at and do. And if we can take 2 of those bets or 3 of those bets, right, whether that's maybe 1 next year, you sort of trade that for a future pick and then you take, you know, 1 later on in this draft or something like that, right? That's really the strategy that I'm going to try and employ with a lot of this stuff. So that's really, you know, my findings on all of that. So that'll do it for this strategy, you know, this topical strategy session, I would say. A little bit different than the Sunday team buildings I've been doing, but I figured this was a good place to sort of put this all as we sort of cover rookie drafts, talking some strategy on Sundays, you know, more rookie content this week. I'll have a guest on for the next Sunday strategy session to break down, like I said, a team that he and I co-own, so we'll talk about that. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.